Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Michigan Literary Network Radio for Wednesday, November 2nd, 2016. I'm Andrea Daniel, and today I am replaying last week's interview with social studies teacher Kufir Lang because I thought the topic was important enough to hear again. We talked about using books about and by African Americans to instill a sense of identity in African American youth, and we'll get to it in just a few minutes.
Motown Writers connects writers to their literary goals and readers to Michigan authors. For writers, we have workshops, conferences, networking opportunities, marketing, and promotions, plus resources available online and offline. We invite writers of all stages to our free writers discussions meetings held every second Saturday except in November at the Barnes & Nobles on Wayne State University campus from 10 a.m. to noon. For readers, we provide literary entertainment, book news, and giveaways online and offline. Check out our website for more information at MotownWriters.com. The Michigan Literary Network and Motown Writers annual events offline include the Essence of Motown Literary Conference and Jam, held every second Saturday in November. Also, our literary meet and greet is held in August of every year. Along with that, we have a book club mix and mingle in October. At these events, we invite readers and writers to come together to celebrate the written word, and at most events, they are free to readers. If you're interested in being a guest on our radio show, advertising with us, or promoting your literary project or service, please visit us at MotownWriters.com and click on our contact page for more information. If you're interested in hosting your own show with the Michigan Literary Network, please submit your show proposals to MotownWriters@Yahoo.com. Please share our information with other readers and writers, and we hope you help us continue to strengthen the literary network in Michigan and increase literacy in the Metro Detroit community. For more information, please visit our website at www.MichiganLiteraryNetwork.com.
And you're tuned in to Michigan Literary Network Radio for October 26, 2016. My guest today is Kufir Lang. He is a 7th and 8th grade middle school teacher at Voyager Academy in Southwest Detroit. Kufir's teaching experience began with the Children's Defense Fund's Kingsley Lincoln Freedom School in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where he was a servant leader intern for 2 years and a site coordinator for 1 year. From his Freedom School experience, Lang moved into a traditional classroom where he still lived by the Freedom School values of I can make a difference in myself, family, community, country, and world through hope, education, and action. And I think those are wonderful ways to go. And here's how I found out about Kufir Lang. I was on Facebook one day, and I saw an article about him from the Atlanta Black Star News online. And it talked about how he worked to give his black male students a sense of identity by introducing them to books by and about African Americans. And I thought that was a great and much needed concept, so I knew I had to have him on the show. And I want to welcome Kufir Lang to Michigan Literary Network Radio. Hello.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you for having me.
I'm doing well. Thank you for being here. And so let's talk about this, Kufir. Let's start off with what you're doing and using books by and about African Americans in the classroom. You know, it isn't the traditional way of teaching history or social studies. So tell us how you got started on this path.
Right. So the way this started was twofold regarding history and social studies. My primary function is a history teacher, and when I teach history, my general idea is that the best way to teach history is to first learn about a people's culture and learn about their culture through their explanations. If we can understand their culture, we can understand their humanity and them as people. And if we understand those things, we can understand the events and the heroes of that particular people or from that time period. And so if we understand culture first, everything else will explain itself. And so in regards to history, and particularly looking at black history or black students, one of the things that's been important is that if we look at culture, then we'll be able to understand the black experience in a way that is told from the perspective of black people. And the other part of it is teaching history. I teach what's called like an advisory class, and this advisory class is all boys. And the primary function of advisory to give students a strong connection with the teacher and have them invested in doing well academically. And so I thought if we are able to invest students academically and have them doing well, I think what's more important than, or the first step to academic success is going to be students who value who they are and have an affirmed sense of identity. And if they affirm who they are, then of course they're going to want to succeed in all aspects because doing something less than great isn't going to be they'll have the internal motivation not to do it because they'll understand as a person and as a valued person, I deserve the best and I should go out and get the best. And so that was kind of my goal with books written by black. We can read about how we are people and how we are people deserving of the best and how we are people who despite being mistreated, we are worthy of more and we have the ability and the capability to fight for more and advocate for more. Then students will see that in themselves and begin to act accordingly.
So what did you see was missing in the curriculum that maybe you had been using before or what you had seen in other classrooms? What did you see that was missing that made you go, I want to introduce this? What was missing, and conversely, what was showing up more often? You know what I'm saying?
Right. I understand completely. So I'll say this. When I started, I didn't have a curriculum at all. So everything was missing. What I did have, though, was experience in the classroom as a student. And I know, and from when I went kindergarten and fifth grade, I went to an African-centered school. So my first educational experience, I saw my identity not just reflected in the curriculum, but affirmed in the curriculum. And I was taught that my story and my history, my culture, my ancestors, the work they did mattered, important, it made a positive impact in the world. When I got to high school, my curriculum, or the curriculum I had in high school, history curriculum, it completely ignored, African-American experiences. It was as if history happened and black people either A, didn't exist, or B, were bystanders, or C, victims. I shouldn't say natural, but the curriculum that we see in American schools are curriculums that promote the legacy that black people are victims or didn't exist. If we were there, we were being dehumanized. If we weren't being dehumanized, we weren't there and we didn't happen. And so what I see in American education and curriculums and state standards is that when the black or African experience is brought into the equation, it's always brought in a position of inferiority. And so what I sought to do with the eighth, we're going to talk about that within the context that doesn't suggest African people or black people simply were complacent or complicit, I should say, in their oppression. I'm going to tell the stories of how we fought back. I'm going to tell the stories of what happened prior to any type of interaction with European oppression. I'm going to tell the stories about why Europeans oppress, and not necessarily as a story of Europeans oppressed because they have power and because they're smarter, but let's really investigate European culture and the flaws of European culture that suggest oppression is natural or should be defended or can be used for a positive gain no matter who the victim is. So victims, I'm probably shouldn't use the word victim, but if somehow it is their fault or they're being oppressed and their oppression is going to somehow help them in the long run. And that's what American education and American state standards promote, that type of idea. And that is the type of idea that is something that we have to reject and we have to fight against, and we have to find ways to make sure that we're telling, more than anything, that we're telling the truth. And then all the other things with affirmation and making sure that our students who have been oppressed by Europeans and European culture, how they don't feel as if they're victims or as if they should be oppressed and they're not worthy of being human.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes to all of that. So through books, and I understand you selected 5 books so far to have the young men read. What are those 5 books, and what is the significance of each one, briefly, to the concept of identity?
Okay, great. So the first book I'll explain is A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. And that book is important because Howard Zinn makes it a point to disrupt the American exceptionalist narrative that is often in history books. And it works to include the narratives of many different people in the curriculum, or in the book, in the text. So in the first chapter, for instance, when Columbus is discussed and indigenous Americans are discussed, we see the points of view of indigenous Americans. We see Columbus himself admitting to being somewhat of the mastermind, one of many masterminds in the genocide and exploitation of indigenous Americans. The second book I chose was Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe. I chose that book because that book is a good look into Igbo culture and traditions. And prior to teaching enslavement of African Americans, what I wanted us to do was examine the lives and examine the culture of Africans as people, and how they organized themselves and how they lived and what traditions they had, and how those traditions, A, came with them as people to America, because it wasn't as if when Europeans took Africans that African people lost all heritage, lost all culture, lost all tradition, lost all their ideas of God. Those things were brought to America too, and so I wanted us to have that part of the story. And I also wanted students to understand that the world we live in is one way of organizing the world. There are other people with other traditions, with other cultures, who have organized communities, organized nations, and those stories of organization and strategies of organization also are worthy of investigation and also can be used as a problem. Police brutality is a large topic right now. If we look at the indigenous Americans, if we look at the Igbo, and Things Fall Apart, there were no police. And so if we have an example of, two communities that we investigate in history and they manage to resolve conflicts without police, maybe that means one day we can do the same. Another book I chose was Monster by Walter Dean Myers. And that book is about a young boy, a teenager who's 16 years old. And he's charged with murder. And the book documents how he is experiencing the murder trial and how he's writing a play about his experience. And his whole goal is to show himself not to be a monster and how he is still a person. And I thought that would be a great book because I think my black male students would be able to identify, not with the idea that they've been depicted as monsters or in the eyes of the justice system, but maybe in other aspects of life they can see, wow, I see that the way people are treating me, the way institutions are treating me, they're treating me as if I'm not a person. And that is not an indictment on me, but that is an indictment on your inability to recognize my humanity. And I'm going to not only fight for my own ability to be human, but I'm also going to challenge your actions that are attempting to dehumanize me. And I think Monster does a great job of that. Chose the book Slam because it's another great Walter D. Myers book, and it's about a young boy who plays basketball, and his goal is to be a Division I college basketball player. And he's also battling his temper, and he's also battling the school that isn't the best. And so it's just showing how hard he's working and how he's just trying to live out his dreams. And I thought that was something my students would be able to identify with. I chose the autobiography of Malcolm X because I think that book does a great job of giving a narrative, but also does a great job of explaining political education and how that develops. And I thought that that's something that if we do a book like Monster or if we do a book like Slam where we're looking at narratives and young people who are really trying to make sense of their world and make sense of who they are in this world, and then we can look at Malcolm X who has that same struggle, and after finding out who he is in this world and making sense of that, he says, okay, this is how I want to organize and how I want to make a difference. And the last two books are both by Sharon Flake. One, The Skin I'm In, which is about a young dark-skinned girl who comes to love the fact that she's dark-skinned and feel bad about how other people are making fun of her and how she's able to really grow into herself and love herself. And I thought that was great. And the last one is You Don't Even Know Me, also by Sharon Flake. And that's a book of short stories and poems about young black boys who are just trying to explain the world they live in and also saying there are people who are attempting to say I'm something and they don't even know who I am. And this is my chance to say I am who I am and I'm proud of who I am. And here's how I can express that.
Oh, wow, wow. Okay, so you had 7 books. I was mistaken. I said 5 and should have said 7. All powerful, powerful books. But you teach history and social studies, and you have some fictional texts in that lineup. Why did you choose to implement fictional texts in your history class?
Right. I think teaching fiction is important because I think teaching art is important. And I think I put fiction writing in the context of art. I think what art does is art explains experiences, and it gives a way for people to express their experience. And I think if we are in a history class and we really want to understand a people's culture and a people's tradition, then we need to understand their art because their art is not only an expression of it, but it is the culture. And so it's one thing to say that a people's culture is A, B, and C, and we see it like this. It's another thing to say, we're going to read their fiction, and this is the culture, and this is how it is performed, and this is how we can understand it. And so that's why I like to implement fiction.
Okay, great. Okay, so you have A People's History of the United States, Things Fall Apart, Monster, Slam, The Autobiography of Malcolm X, I'm In, and You Don't Even Know Me. Now, what is your response to a potential accusation that your curriculum may be politically charged? I mean, you know, The Autobiography of Malcolm X was a banned book.
Right. And I would say my curriculum, I would agree my curriculum is politically charged. But I would also say education is politically charged. And that my politics of education are politics of honesty, are politics of justice, are politics of truth, and that I want to humanize my students, and I don't want my students to be educated politically to believe that they are inferior or educated politically to believe that they don't deserve the best in this world or educated politically to believe that their ancestors aren't worth anything or educated politically to say that, yes, they're oppressed, and yes, that's how it should be. You should just find a way to make the best of your oppression. And I think that education that doesn't work to affirm black students is doing that. It's politically teaching black students to, oh, you just buy into this system and the best will happen for you. And that's not true. That's political. I think it's also political if we teach history to our students, to black students in particular, and we don't acknowledge that that this country's function and motivation from its inception has been to exploit black people and to find ways to not only exploit their labor but exploit their lives and discard them, political as well. And so everything in education is to advance an interest. The interest I want to advance is black students who are empowered and who want to make the world a better place. And I think if you don't, if someone objects to me empowering black students, then I would, you know, I would like to hear how they explain their politics, and then we can go from there. But I have no problem accepting my politics and explaining them. And I would hope any teacher is willing to accept their politics and explain them.
Exactly, and that's a bold move to have to make just to get your point across about what you're doing to your students. What kind of responses have you gotten from parents about what you're teaching and how you're teaching?
Right, have a lot of teachers, and so I think some parents may not even be aware of just exactly what I'm attempting to do or how far I'm trying to go. And I think what I have seen is the parents I've talked to, they just see the challenge of the work that I give, and I'll give you this example in particular. I had a student's parent come in and on the first day before I had taught a thing, asked me what I believed about enslavement. I explained it to her, and after I gave her my philosophy and my ideas, she was like, okay, you're good with me, because my child's teacher last year taught my child that slavery had nothing to do with race. And after that, John, I know that parent has always been supportive. And I think, in general, are supportive and trust teachers, and sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. But I can say in my case, I believe it's for better, and I appreciate all the support and the confidence that the parents have given me.
Okay, good. That's a great example that you gave. And so I understand when you started out with this, with what you're doing now, you would give the students copied pages from the books that you had them reading because you didn't have the physical books. But then at a certain point, you did a crowdfunding campaign to help you get the physical books. Talk about that crowdfunding campaign and going from copy pages to physical books and what kind of impact that had.
Yeah, that made a huge difference. I think when I had the copy pages, I don't even think the students really acknowledge them as books. My students would say, "Oh, it's a packet. It's a packet. It's just a bunch of words on the paper."
Mm.
And they would like doodle on them, and you know, would try to do the most to make do with them. And when this year I knew, first off, I just didn't want to spend hours at a copy machine anymore. But secondly, I knew having the book would just be way more powerful in the sense that not only would it save time, but students could see, oh, no, this is real. And so this year the students are they take care of the books. I don't have the same problem with, like, doodling. I know early in the school year I had a student who I had last year when I was still making copies just of different chapters because she was a seventh grader, but now I have her in eighth grade, and it was of the same book, and she goes, "Mr. Lang, I love this book. This is a great book." And I was like to myself, man, that's the same book you were reading last year. But now as a physical copy, I think that they love the book just because it's like, wow, this is real. And I think the other part of it is when you're in a school and you're not giving what's going on, and they're like, how could you be serious about my education if you can't even give me a book? And so this year, when we have books, and I think the students have more pride in their work because they see, oh, okay, I can see in this classroom now that there's something positive happening and education is happening, and I can tell because I have books. Last year, you wouldn't even give me a book, and you're telling me to read something. Like, come on. I think there was a lack of respect for that, and rightfully so. I mean, the students deserve books. You're in the school.
Right, exactly, exactly. I love that description, and I applaud you, Kofir, for the work that you are doing, just getting these books into the students' hands and being willing to talk through everything with them so that they understand that, you know, that they have a strong identity in America, they have a strong identity in the world, and you're showing them through books, and I can tell just how important this work is to you. So I applaud you, and I want to thank you so much for being with me on Michigan Literary Network Radio Day, because unfortunately our time is up. But
okay.
It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I wish you all the best that can come your way in your career as you go forward with whatever you want to do, and all the best to your students as you instill identity in them.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
You are so welcome. So you have a good rest of your night.
Okay, you too.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And that is it for this edition of Michigan Literary Network Radio. I want to again thank Kofir Lang for being a guest on Michigan Literary Network Radio. He is definitely doing good work with his students by giving them good books to read that show them what their identity is in an equal way, in a way that they can relate to, and not in a way that shows them to be inferior, which is done in a lot of education. So I want to thank him for that work. And be sure to tune in to Michigan Literary Network Radio and stay connected with Michigan's literary community through the Michigan Literary Network and Motown Writers Network at www.motownwriters.com. And you can find us on Facebook, and come back here next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. to hear more literary good stuff on Michigan Literary Network Radio. And I am Andrea Daniel. And I want to thank you so much for listening into the show tonight. I always appreciate you being there. And you can always go back and listen to the show again right here on blogtalkradio.com so that you can reflect on what was said during this interview with Kofir Lang. Have a good rest of your day. Have a good rest of your week. And until next time, live a good story. And if you are so inclined, write about it. Good night.
When you don't go to Geico.com,